We're on in 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Oh, well.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to I'm Creative. I'm Kylie.
I'm Nathan.
And I'm losing my voice.
Why are you losing your voice?
We just got back from Cancun.
That makes a lot of sense. Did you have a good time?
I had a great time. Did you have a good time?
I did have a good time.
What was your favorite part?
My favorite part was this park that was inside of the all-inclusive resort. It was called Senses with an X in front. And we walked through this sensory cave that had a bunch of different elements and climates, like the beach, the swamp. The desert, like rocks, like a
rope bridge.
That was terrifying.
It was like pitch black. Like you truly could not see a thing. If you looked behind you, you couldn't see a thing. We must have been walking for like
10, 15 minutes.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be like a 2-minute experience.
It was a spiritual awakening. A personal growth.
My knee is super bruised though.
Yeah, it was a good time. Ziplined.
It was a work trip for Nathan, so he got to see a bunch of his friends from work last summer.
Oh, so they're just my friends?
Our friends from work last summer.
And swam with dolphins.
Swam with dolphins.
Is that your favorite part?
Yeah, I think it might be. We also did snorkeling.
Yeah.
At the reef, though. I swear it was.
And the snorkeling was fun. I had snorkeled when I was a child before in Cancun, and it was a good time, and I thought it was going to be a good time again, but apparently if you have a mustache that's somewhat thick, like I have, it does not provide a good seal for the bottom part of your nose, so like the whole time I'd go under, my nose was just filled with seawater, and it was fine, but like I just had to constantly put pressure on my mustache for it to seal a little bit better.
He had to hold it down while he was swimming.
Yeah, so if I were to do it again, I would probably be clean shaven or just trim down my mustache a bunch. I think that would have worked a little bit better.
Yeah.
So
some of the other guys had mustaches, just not as thick.
Yeah, and mine was longer too. So yeah, it was a good time. We had a lot of fun.
Okay.
You ready to start this then?
I'm ready to start.
Enough jibber jabber.
Enough banter.
Love a good banter.
Okay.
Anyways, what are you afraid of today, Kylie?
Today we're going to talk about my fear of the woods.
Okay.
Nathan is very familiar with this fear.
Yeah.
Shortly into our marriage, I planned a surprise camping trip. Well, it wasn't even that big of a surprise.
Yeah.
It tried to be a surprise and then I couldn't get any of your friends to respond to me, so I just had to tell a few that you would contact them. But we were getting a bunch of people together to go camping, and then we got there and the sun set, and I had like a full-blown panic attack.
And I guess I'm gonna figure out more in depth of why that terrifies you.
This is gonna be one where there will be a woods part 2, part 3, part 4. There's a lot of them.
Okay.
But when I first wanted to cover my fear of the woods, this isn't the first one that came to mind.
Cool.
So today we're going to be covering the Delphi murders.
Delphi.
Delphi, Indiana.
Okay. That's a town?
A town. My sources are Wikipedia, an Inkblot video, Crime Watch 8, the U.S. Sun, True Crime Society blog, Inside Edition YouTube channel, Arc Latex YouTube channel, Investigation Discovery, and the True Crime Grunge podcast.
Okay.
I'll put all the specific links in our show notes. This case is going to have a lot of things that I'm going to show you and post in show notes or on our Instagram. So
okay,
be prepared for that. Okay. So our case starts on Monday, February 13th in 2017. The students in Delphi, Indiana had the day off of school because of an extra snow day. So basically they had a built-in extra day, assuming that snow would make them cancel a day of school, but then snow never did. And so they had a free day off.
Nice.
I'm sure you've never experienced that, being from Utah.
Maybe once or twice.
So, the two girls in this story are Libby Gurman who's 14, and Abby Williams, 13. They had to sleep over the Sunday night before, and they were looking for something to do that day just to get out of the house and do something fun.
Mm-hmm.
So they asked Libby's older sister, Kelsey, to drop them off at the Delphi Historic Trails. The trails were a common place to go to hang out, chat, and take pictures. It was pretty much the only thing you can do in Delphi other than getting food, according to Kelsey.
Love a good small town.
Yeah. Originally, Kelsey said no because she had plans to meet up with her boyfriend before work. But then she felt guilty because she said that she had been being a bad sister lately. She wasn't thinking about her sister very much, and she felt bad, so she agreed to give them a ride there if they figured out how to get a ride home.
All right.
She'd be at work. So at 1:35 p.m., they're dropped off by Libby's older sister, and they were going to hike Monon High Bridge over Deer Creek. It's like a high bridge that looks like a railroad, kind of, and it's like very old.
Okay.
Like, you know the bridge to get to Tidlandy's Cave? Yeah. It's kind of like that, but like bigger. Like, you can walk on it. You don't have to crawl over. Granted, you didn't crawl over it. I'm also afraid of bridges, apparently. Kelsey remembers making sure that the girls had their sweatshirts with them. She also says that their family had a big thing about making sure you say I love you to people before you part ways or hang up the phone. You know, that's how I am, too.
Yeah.
Whenever we talk to our friends, whenever I'm on the phone with them or seeing them, I'm always like, oh.
Yeah.
So, before they say goodbye to each other, they said what they always said, which was goodbye, I love you, and I'll see you later. At 2:07 p.m., Libby posted a picture of Abby on Snapchat of Abby walking across the bridge. And that was the last communication with girls. At 3:15, Libby's father went to where the girls were supposed to meet them, but they didn't show up. There was no, like, set time for them to get picked up. It was just after an hour, hour and a half, 2 hours, he was going to call them and say, hey, I'm on my way, and then they'd meet at this point.
Okay. I'm assuming reception's good wherever they're at, then?
Apparently.
But that's the assumption?
The assumption, because she was posting Snapchats, they made the plan to call, so they must have known they would be able to get in touch.
Makes sense.
At that time.
Yeah.
So he called, and he called, and they didn't show up, so the family started searching for the girls.
Okay.
At 5:30 p.m. So this is...
And it's going to start getting dark pretty soon.
Yeah. About 2 hours and 15 minutes after he was first calling and looking for them, the girls are officially reported missing. Which seems like a long time, but never want to actually report each other.
Yeah.
It's like, it feels like it's an ambition of something bad.
Yeah. I didn't plan out.
Originally, the police and the families did not suspect foul play. They just figured that the girls had gotten lost in the woods or injured, like one girl had hurt herself and the other one was staying with her and they just needed to be found.
Yeah.
At 5:45 p.m., an Amber Alert went out for a different missing girl in a different nearby town because the situation of her going missing said that she was believed to be in extreme danger.
And
this took immediate attention away during the critical hours of searching for the two girls.
That sucks.
I couldn't find what actually happened to that girl.
Oh, man.
But I hope she was safely. But it's mentioned in reporting for this story because usually when kids go missing, everybody in the area looking, but because it was happening two at the same time, and one was believed to be danger,
and
one was supposed to be just locked.
Yeah.
Literally, weren't the priority at the time.
Yeah.
Large search began for the two girls involving volunteers and multiple law enforcement agencies, and the sun set at 6:20 p.m. At midnight, the sheriff says in a news release that their biggest concern is exposure to the elements.
Yeah.
That plant still, but like, we just think they're out there and it's just going to get cold. It's Indiana in February.
Yeah, so likely to get below freezing.
Yeah. February 14th, so the next day. So at midnight, he says this. At 1:30, an hour and a half later, a bolo goes out for Abby and Libby.
A what?
A bolo. It means be on the lookout.
Okay.
It's not an Amber Alert, but it's like to the cops in the area.
Yeah, okay. Makes sense.
And just like, hey, you see these two girls? We are looking for them.
Gotcha.
At 7:26 a.m., an Amber Alert is repeated for the other missing girl.
Okay.
So there's still two searches going on.
and they're still not lit fire.
At 11:45 a.m., surgeons find a black Nike shoe that belonged to Libby. And around noon, the bodies of Abigail Williams and Liberty Gurman were found near the High Bridge Trail in Death by the end.
The next day?
Yes. So it was around noon, so it was a little less than 24 hours. Then he got to the park. The bodies were found about half a mile east of the High Bridge near the bank of Deer Creek. The trail was in a remote location that anyone just passing through the area would not have known of. Like, if you and I are driving through Delphi and wanted to go on a hike, we've not known of this trail.
Gotcha. It's like a local lonely thing.
Yeah. It is reported that the scene was so horrific and disturbing that officers had to seek counseling and they reported having nightmares about it.
Jeez.
The identities were not confirmed at 2 p.m. when the discovery was announced, and they announced that foul play was suspected. So the police announced that there were two bodies were found, but they hadn't announced the identity.
Jeez.
So we don't know if that's because of the state the bodies were in that they weren't sure, or if it was because they were just keeping some information close to the chest. But I found this in one source. At 4 p.m., the superintendent of Libby and Adams School announced that the bodies were of the two girls, even though he had no confirmation from police.
It's ass house.
Yeah. The next day, at 3 p.m., so over 24 hours after the bodies were found.
Okay.
The police hold a news conference confirming that the bodies found for Libby and Abby.
Wow.
They never released and have never released how the girls were killed.
So it's either really, really gruesome, which is my first guess, or it's just like their bodies were, it has to be gruesome. I can't give another explanation.
The other explanation would be to, like, figure out who's lying if they confess. If somebody goes to police and is like, I shot them, then they're like, well, they didn't die from gunshots, then they're like, okay.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
That's super scary, though.
At 3 p.m., the news conference happens. At 3:03, police scanners pick up chatter at two pieces of evidence picked up at the crime scene, underwear and cigarette butt in the water that was less than 2 or 3 days old. The crime scene for this crime isn't just where the bodies are found. It's the bridge and all the area between the bridge and where the bodies are found, including the creek. Mm-hmm. That is a huge area.
Yeah.
Of places to look. At 7 p.m. that same day, police release an image of a man who was reported to be seen on the trail near where the girls had been. He's a Caucasian man with his hands in his pockets, walking on the bridge with his head down. A few days later, he's named the prime suspect. And this is the picture they release.
Okay. Just your average drunken guy?
Yeah. It's very... He's going to be known as Bridge Guy.
Bridge Guy.
So I'm going to call him Bridge Guy or BG. So February 22nd, about a week later, police release an audio recording of the suspect. So I'm going to play that now. I want you to see if you can tell what it is.
I heard downhill.
People flank down the hill.
Down the hill.
Down the hill. Okay. Other people say downhill.
Yeah.
But the most agreed upon is that he's saying down the hill.
Okay.
This is one of the craziest parts of the case right here. The same news conference when they released the audio, the officials revealed the audio and the image of the man that they released. Both came from Libby's phone.
Really?
Yeah.
So Libby took a picture of the guy and recorded him.
Mm-hmm. They call her a hero because she had the foresight to record the exchange in secret, and she felt threatened.
What a woman.
Well, but she felt creeped out by this guy and let us take me pictures and videos.
That's terrifying.
They haven't released, like, everything.
I'm curious what else she had.
Yeah.
Because normally, you don't just take a 1-second audio clip or just one picture. I mean, one picture I can get with, but, like, if it was a video.
That's just going to be that.
Yeah. There's got to be more on her phone.
They say there's more evidence on the phone, but they didn't want to release anymore. They could compromise the investigation. The award offered for the case at the time was $41,000. July 17th, they distributed a composite sketch of the person of prime interest. It was drawn by police from eyewitnesses who saw a certain hike around the trails the day that the girl disappeared. That is
Okay. So guy with the hat. Clean shaven, makes up a goatee.
Mm-hmm.
A little fat around the face. Older man.
Makes it white.
Yeah.
So that was July 17th, 2017. Now we're going to jump to April 19th, 2019.
So 2 years later.
Mm-hmm. Police announced that they're launching a new direction in the case. Later that month, they released some more materials. There's a short video of blue jean jacket suspect walking across the bridge for a little over a second. So here's that video. This is somebody trying to stabilize the inmate's bridge.
Yes. Looks like he's got a limp.
You are so on it. Lots of people said that.
Yeah.
Lots of people said it looked like he had a limp, almost like one leg is shorter than the other, or he has a specific walk. And police have said to not focus on the way that he walked because the bridge is deteriorating and the distance between the planks you have to step on would make anyone walk weird.
Okay.
So they also updated the composite sketch saying that the original, the goatee, is now secondary to this sketch.
That is very different.
Not even. They don't even look like the same person at all.
Yeah, this one's clean shaven, looks 10, 15 years younger.
Baby face.
Yeah.
No clothing, okay?
Yeah.
They say he's aged between 18 and 40.
That's a huge gap.
And they say he has a youthful appearance that may make him appear younger than he actually is. They also released an extended version of the audio.
Okay. So he's saying, guys, downhill.
Yeah.
Like he's directing them somewhere or showing them something.
Yeah. It's funny that you keep saying downhill because that video is actually from somebody from saying it's downhill, not downhill. So.
I'm sticking with my guns that it's just downhill.
Well, let me say probably, because I always hear down the hill, but I've also only been told down, so either way. They say that they believe the suspect is hidden in plain sight and is familiar with Delphi, either living there or working there or something. They even say that it's possible that the man is in the room as they speak and that they are pretty sure they've already interviewed.
Dang.
Yeah.
They're pretty sure they've already interviewed him. Why don't they arrest?
Now we're going to go through a list of people who have been linked to the case or mentioned as people of interest.
Okay.
First on my list is Paul Etter. On July 22nd, he kidnapped and raped a 26-year-old woman in Indiana. 5 days after they started looking for him, he was in a plan over stand-up with police and then had killed himself. Police investigating Abby Libby's murder reportedly asked for autopsy results and DNA samples from Etter in relation to the Delphi murders.
So basically, he had committed a crime and they were trying to link his kind of bad behavior to other crimes.
Yeah.
In the past.
This is also the first time in my research that I found them asking for DNA on a suspect.
Yeah.
It makes me wonder, do they have the DNA of the killer? Otherwise, what would you need DNA for if not to compare it to something you already have?
The mismanagement of the investigation was very, very big. It's like, it's just very weird, you know, like red flag number one is like withholding so much information. And maybe you're doing a good job of revealing information at a time, but I'm suspicious of the people investigating this case. To say you have so much, to say you have so much evidence, and especially all the stuff on her phone, and then for it to go cold for 2 years, makes me believe that they're not doing the job correctly. Okay.
I think it's shocking that it's not solved with all the evidence that they have.
Sure.
But I feel like if they were truly desperate, they would release more.
Yeah. I'm not a cop. I'm not an investigator. I just listen to crime podcasts.
When officers investigating Vivian Abbey's murder were asked if he was the suspect, the police just said that his name had been brought up. Specifically, his name was brought up by somebody calling into the tip line.
Okay.
They also said that just because he's getting a lot of media attention right now did not mean that he had gone up their list of suspects. They just want all the information they can get about anybody whose name has been brought up in relation to murders. Next person is Daniel J. Nations. He's a registered sex offender, also from Indiana. He was arrested in Colorado in September 2017 for threatening strangers on a hiking trail with a hatchet.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Yeah. There was also a bicyclist fatally shot on the same trail around the same time. Police noticed he had expired Indiana plates on his car. So if he's a registered sex offender in Indiana, if he was in Colorado in September of the year they were murdered. They were murdered in February.
Like he was almost on the run. Doesn't look great.
Spokesmen say there are many similarities between the cases, but they can't release any more information because the Indiana police still want information about the Delphi murders release. So, the people investigating in Colorado say that there are more similarities between this incident and the Delphi incident, but they can't release the similarities because if they release it, they're also releasing information about the Delphi murders and that would compromise the investigation. You don't like this at all.
I don't. I just don't see the correlation. If you can help me understand it a little bit more, you can. But as right now, like, information is information and it can be valuable.
I feel that I've seen police botch a lot in investigations.
I mean, if they can share information between the two detective agencies or the two departments, you would think that would be helpful.
I think they're sharing it between departments. I think they're not sharing.
I respect that.
I also heard on True Crime Garage that the Georgia Bureau of Investigation was called in.
For this case?
For the Indiana.
Okay.
They were interviewing a man named Skip. And they do a lot of subsequent the Delphi murders. And well, Nisa probably listened to the one about an interview with Skip and talks about a suspect. He said that they called in the GVI to set the set of fresh eyes.
Yeah.
Like, we can't figure this out. Call in a set of fresh eyes. Look at this. Evening.
Yeah.
Which is another sign that they're trying to do their jobs.
Sure.
What a huge sign that they're not doing their jobs is not letting people help.
Yes.
Like, there's going to be some cases we cover where, like,
the kind of pride gets in the way.
The FBI offers to help and they say no.
Continue. I'm fed up with people's pride.
On January 5th, 2018, Nation was sentenced to 3 years probation for threatening people, but was not released since he had an active warrant out from him in Indiana. So on January 24th, he was transferred to Indiana custody on an unrelated charge for failure to register his sex offender. A month later, he was released and he was no longer a person of interest in the Delphi case. Again, they're not very keen on sharing information, so we have no idea what we'll do now.
Sure.
Next person, Thomas Bruce. In 2018, he was charged with fatally shooting one woman and sexually assaulting two others in St. Louis. He's a former pastor. Or he might have been pastor at his town.
Nice.
The two women were ordered into the back room of a religious store with a gun.
Lights.
Yeah. He has a similar stature to the suspect in the Delphi case. He's between 5'7" and 5'9". And during the attack of these two women, he wore a flat cap and a navy blue jacket.
So the flat cap, kind of like the original hand drawing, and the blue jacket, like in the picture.
Yep. On December 4th, he was charged with at least 17 felonies and could possibly get the death penalty.
Whoa, whoa. In the same year? Did I hear that right?
Yeah, he was charged with all the clubs. I did look it up in an updated article. It said that as of October 23rd, 2021, he was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. In addition to that, 11 other life sentences and 4 15-year prison terms.
We have to look at the man.
Yeah. Never getting out. Thank goodness. Indiana police did look into his connection around the time of the arrest and never all the information. So, same state, crappy human being, they looked into it.
Yeah. It's just tough to make a connection.
Yeah. Some of these, like the police have talked about, some of these internet sleuths have talked about.
It's yes.
Interesting.
Very interesting.
Next person, Charles Eldridge. January 8th, 2019, he was arrested in Union City, Indiana for child molestation and solicitation. Police in that county alerted the FBI to the potential link. The Delphi murders because he looked like the sketch before the sketch was updated. That's him next to the original sketch.
It's pretty close. I mean, if I had an ear like that, I'd wear a hat too.
He really does look like the sketch. Maybe just like a wider face, but obviously eyewitness reports. Not notoriously reliable.
Yes.
Next person, James Brian Chadwell II. He was named as a person of interest on April 27, 2021. This guy, it's a piece of work. He molested and attempted to murder a 9-year-old girl. She was found locked in his basement just a minute away from her own home.
Oh my.
He originally pleaded not guilty, but after the judge denied the motion to move the location of the trial, he pled guilty. He's facing up to 160 years in prison, but he was sentenced to 90. He's not eligible for parole until 2091.
Garbage.
Yeah, so if he was listed as a person of interest, I couldn't find anything else, but he's a garbage human being. So.
Yeah.
If anything, even if these people didn't commit the Delphi murders,
gladly got time in jail.
And lied to Rick Pin. No, without their prep. So, this is a more recent update. December 9th, 2021, police were looking for anyone who had had social media connection with someone with the username Anthony_shots in the years 2017 or 2018. The profile was confirmed to belong to 27-year-old Keegan Anthony Klein, who lived a 40-minute drive from Delphi. He was setting up fake accounts on Instagram and Snapchat and using pictures of a male model to catfish underage victims.
Classic.
Several women came forward talking about disturbing messages they got from him. One woman said she started receiving messages from him when she was 12. He told her she was beautiful, that she should come stay the night at his house, and that she should let him take her out of state.
That's terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
And around the same ages and the same social media platforms that those girls were using.
Mm-hmm. His phone was factory reset 9 days after the murders of Abby and Libby.
Weeks.
Libby's sister, Kelsey, says of Klein, quote, "I think in the past when there were names put out in the media, that was more the media putting them out there. But I think this is the first time we've ever seen police put out any sort of name about potential suspect," end quote. He's currently in jail awaiting trial for dozens of charges, including child exploitation, possession of child pornography, child solicitation for sexual intercourse, and obstruction of justice.
Achieving.
Some sources say that Libby scrubbed her phone a couple of days before her murder.
Yeah.
So some people think that that was because she was talking to somebody she shouldn't.
Didn't want. And then they were going to go meet up at the park.
Yeah.
That's really, really scary.
Really scary. It is a theory. This last suspect is the one that they talk about in the True Crime Garage episodes. There's three episodes about this suspect, so I'm going to give a very brief outline. But if you...
Now I'll teach you Crime Garage.
What's your... If you guys want a more in-depth, these are their three most recent Delphi episodes as of February 6th, 2022. So I'm going to do just a very brief overview of what I gathered from those three episodes, although I did listen to them on a plane and I did sleep. But here we go. So we're going to call him DP.
Okay.
That's what they called him. So my understanding is I got a little bit confused with all the different names because there's Bridge Guy and Flannel Guy and DP and, this guy named McCain who was in charge of the trails, like Parks and Rec type of guy. So, this is what I have gathered. McCain, the guy in charge of the trails, was going around asking if he would see two young girls. He ran into DP and asked him if he had seen two girls, and he said, "No, but I heard a couple arguing under the bridge."
Okay.
First of all, and he said it was around 3 p.m.
Yeah.
Under the bridge is part of the crime scene.
Yeah.
Especially with somebody saying down the hill.
Yeah.
And all reports of a couple arguing, nobody saw a couple arguing. They heard a couple arguing, which means let's say a heterosexual couple.
Yes.
They've heard a guy and a girl arguing.
Yeah.
So was it Bridge Guy and one of the girls getting into an argument?
Mm-hmm.
Possibly. He has many different stories. So he was in the park the day they got killed.
Yeah.
In the area.
He was questioned by the park ranger that same
also,
day.
But click, called in by police as an eyewitness.
Yeah.
This is the only suspect I found where they can actually put him at the scene of the crime on the day of the crime.
Yes.
Which is a big deal. So 7 days after the murders and a few days after the photos released, he went to police saying that he saw a bridge guy.
Mm-hmm.
He says that he's the reason for the first sketch. He says he looks like the bridge sketch.
Weird. Weird thing to say.
Yeah. On the internet, he's also said that he's part of the argument couple.
Weird.
Yeah. And so people are like, well, if you're part of the arguing couple, then are you the one arguing with the girls?
Yeah.
He says he was meeting up with a woman he was cheating on his girlfriend with.
My pistol.
Yeah. He knew the girls. He had ran in the bus with them. His sister-in-law coached one of the girls in softball.
Creepy.
He was 22 or 23 at the time. So, like, older than the girls, but, like, still pretty young.
Yeah.
The sketch of the young man, was the first sketch created.
Again, mismanagement of information.
Apparently, according to some sources I have found, DP went in, told his account, and they used that information to release the first sketch.
Weird.
I have not seen a picture of him. His identity has not been released in case he didn't do it. He's never officially been named a suspect, as far as I know. But my guess would be that he looks like the second picture.
Yeah.
So he went out and was like, actually, listen.
Man.
Yeah.
That's so weird.
Yeah. This guy is just, and his story keeps changing, and he was there at the time, and so that's, like, the most recent theory that I've heard.
Very, very interesting. And it seems like he's very, very involved. Usually when a killer kills someone, they want to be involved with the investigation because it's a point of pride,
mm-hmm.
and they want to figure out if they're in trouble.
Him inserting himself into the investigation is definitely a big, the stunt I've done.
Yes. Crazy.
His story keeps changing from the scenes. What the fuck? All right, so those are all the suspects. Now I'm going to kind of get into what's happened since and what the families have done since then.
Yeah, because it's been so long. It's almost five years, right?
Mm-hmm.
From 2017 to 2022. Jeez.
It'll be 5 years. Libby's mother requested homeowners in the area to have orange lights on their front porch to commemorate the girls and to remind people that the murderer has still not been caught.
Yeah.
In August of 2017, they built a sports complex in Delphi in memory of the girls. In 2020, the L&A Park Foundations was named the recipient of the NBA All-Star 2021 Legacy Grant. Now, see, Libby's older sister, who dropped them on, has been very open about suffering from survivor's guilt. She often wondered if it would have happened if she had never agreed to drop the girls off that day.
Yeah.
I can't imagine.
I'd feel horrible, too.
She says she's learning to not feel guilty about something that she couldn't change if she wanted to. Because obviously, she can't go back in time and not drop the girls off.
Yeah.
And she had good intentions.
Yeah.
And it's not her fault. It's called whatever.
Or that she will be decided to hurt them, kill them.
Kelsey and other members of the girls' family have reported suffering from trauma-induced mental blocks in the weeks and months after the girls' deaths. They say that they'll almost unlock the memory of people visiting or sending gifts that they couldn't remember before.
Yeah.
Because that whole timeline is like a blur to them.
I'm sure it goes super fast and everything was happening at once, and it's just a memory you don't want to remember.
Yeah.
Just a bad time for everything going on in your life. I don't blame it at all for having memory blocked.
I have memory blocks for much less. So I can't even imagine.
So how severe it might be. Yeah. Really well.
Kelsey believes that the reason the case is still active today is because of Libby's courage. She felt Libby was off and was able to get evidence.
Yeah.
And the fact that one of the victims took audio, video pictures of the person who killed them is what makes it such a fascinating case.
Yeah.
That's why so many people still talk about. That's why it's still in the public eye. People are still, obviously, two young girls being killed is enough for people to want justice. But no one, like, these two girls did the right thing. They tried to, like, get stuff together. And Kelsey said that she thinks that Libby reported it to show the family later. Like, check out this weird guy who's talking to.
Yeah.
Kelsey remembers Libby as the funniest person ever. She says that Libby never knew a stranger. She was kind and made people feel comfortable and loved and worthy. Kelsey tells people from their school come up and share stories of a time that Libby was there for them when
no one else was. That's really sweet.
If you want a more in-depth podcast about this case, there's a podcast called Down the Hill that goes into a deep dive. The whole podcast is focused on this case.
Wow.
Anyone with information is asked to contact Abby and Libby Tip at cacoshrf.com or the Delphine Homicide Investigation Tip Line at 844-459-5786, the Indiana State Police at 800-382-7537, or the Carroll County Sheriff's Department at 765-564-2413. We'll put all those contacts in show notes. That heartbreaking case, one of the cases that induced my fear of the woods.
You just wanted to go for a walk on a snow day, and next thing you know, a bad man makes a bad decision and creates this tidal wave of effects that still hasn't had a lot of closure. It's awful. I hope there's more information. Because my thing is, like, still, if the police claim they have all this information, you would think 5 years after they would start releasing more stuff.
And they're asking for DNA. And they have these suspects. They should be able to collect DNA and be like, okay, yep. I mean, it's also possible, I've heard in other cases, that like the DNA is in a full profile. So if somebody matches, that doesn't mean they did it. It just ruled it out. Kind of like how they spew blood types.
Yeah. We've done something with that in the biology class, but it's very tough to make sure that, because DNA, saying DNA, it's very broad when they're doing DNA tests, because there can be many different tests. But many different types of people are very similar type of DNA.
And the only evidence that they asked for DNA was like a report, like they never said that they asked for DNA. And part of me wonders if that's because they would have to release the kind of DNA, because if it was semen DNA, then that gives us more information.
Yeah.
And again, like,
only there's so little information about how the crime was done. No, this is how they died. It just seems very, like, it's just, I'm very taken back that they haven't released how they died, the manner of death, the tool or blunt force or whatever killed them. I hope the family knows that at least, because if I was a parent and after 5 years, the police still hasn't told me how my kid died, I'd be really mad. I'd want to know.
Yeah, that's horrible. I don't know if I'd want to know.
I would want to know.
I've heard some cases where the police are like, we need you to come identify. But like, if you come identify, we can tell you now if it's them or not. But if you wait a little bit, we can do a test. You don't have to see the body this way.
Yes. It's really tough.
Parents have to be sobering.
Again, I'm not in that situation. I wouldn't know what I would want to do and when I'm in the situation, but
I don't think I'd be able to have closure without knowing, but I think the second I knew, I wish I didn't know.
Yeah. It's tough. That's a very personal thing. But I really hope that
they're really holding a lot of information close to the chest.
They might be saying that and they don't have anything, or they do have a lot of things and they aren't doing anything about it.
They keep,
so either way, it makes me upset.
When they announced that they were going in a new direction with the case, they were like, whoever killed the girl thought that they had us. They didn't think we changed. Like, they have said they're starting over. Like, they're totally starting over and going a whole new direction with it. And when you hear it, this is why I don't think they're mismanaging it. I think it's just a really tricky case. Like, I've heard some clips of the press conferences and they sound emotional. And they said, what kind of coward person? Like, what do you think the people around you are going to think of you when we catch you? And they find out what you did to these poor girls. It just, it's a haunting case.
Jerry, you're out of the woods.
I don't do woods. You'll realize throughout this podcast that my fear of things is more the fear of people.
Yeah.
In that thing. Like, we have nothing in
common. You live next to the woods.
Yes, but I can see right through them.
Yeah.
And you've noticed I don't go on walks.
By yourself.
By myself in the woods.
Yeah.
I'd have to go with you. Or I have to go on a bike.
Excellent. Thank you. Hopefully we understand a little bit more of your fear.
You respect it, man.
Respect.
Thank you guys for listening. We'll see you on the next case.
Have a good one.
You can follow us on Instagram at WineThePredo. And you can
like our pictures.
Like our pictures.
Comment.
Can rate and subscribe to this podcast. Okay, bye.
Bye.